I'm really hungry.
I'm really in pain. I can tell. I've got a sore back. Speaking of soreness, everyone.
Sorn.
And backs.
Sorn. It's not soreness. It's
hey, everyone.
Soreness.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And
it's Del Toro time.
It's Del Toro time. And guess what that means?
It means we're watching some movies.
I'm going to show a movie, but not to you. I mean, to you, but not to the listener.
I don't think it's possible to show them a movie considering they can't see us.
They cannot see us. It would also be illegal. I would have to like go through a lot of like various like channels just to get the like.
When does something become public property?
That's a good question. They keep moving the goalposts on that. So,
because Frankenstein is public property now, right?
Frankenstein, no. Frankenstein's the Frankenstein Universal film still belongs to Universal. It is not.
I mean, like the book.
Oh, the book, of course. Yeah, the book. The book, yes. But they keep changing the rules to allow companies to hold on to properties longer and longer and longer and
longer.
I mean,
if the company that created it is still around, I think they should be able to hold it onto it as long as they want.
The company?
The person, the company, the whatever.
Until Mickey Mouse dies. Mickey Mouse will
until Disney dies, Mickey Mouse can be Disney's property.
Well, Disney died years ago, decades ago.
The company.
Roy Disney, that can be arranged. Speaking of killing,
Dad,
maybe.
Dad, don't threaten to murder people on our show.
Oh, sorry. That can be arranged. 1941 is the year we're traveling back in time to.
No, I would rather jump into a volcano.
And we're going to be watching 1941's...
Suspicion.
Directed by?
That one guy I don't like.
That boy. Alfred Hitchcock. Starring Cary Grant and Joan Fontaine. Ollie, tell me everything you know about A Suspicion.
It's suspicious.
Well, maybe. This is a movie I have not actually seen Suspicion. I have not seen. The weird thing about Alfred Hitchcock is he made a lot of movies. So it's easy to miss a few. And I've never been considered myself an Alfred Hitchcock, like, super fan.
Super of fan.
So I'm going into this cold as well.
Cold soup.
But I think this one is a psycho thriller.
Cold soup.
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Like anyone who eats cold soup.
Mm-hmm. It's not a comedy.
Good.
So we don't have to worry about you hating it. Like, you hate everything that makes people laugh.
I don't hate everything that makes people laugh. I hate things that are stupid. I hate stupid comedy.
Well, I hope that Alfred Hitchcock, even when in Sullivan's Travels they were being chased by the van,
I liked
and he was
that.
In the car,
that was
pretty stupid, though.
It was, but it wasn't like talking stupid, though.
just like
slapstick and stuff isn't really my thing, and like just people doing stupid things and secondhand embarrassment, like just people like. Embarrassing other people for laughs. That just makes me uncomfortable and it makes me angry.
I have a feeling, and I could be completely mistaken, but I have a feeling that none of that's going to be in 1941's Suspicion by
Suspicion.
Alfred Hitchcock, starring Cary Grant and Joan Fontaine.
You've already said that.
Will you remind our listeners where they know Joan Fontaine from?
What? Who's that?
Joan Fontaine. She is the second lead or the female lead in 1941's Suspicion.
Wow, really?
Where have we seen Joan Fontaine?
I'll
give you a hint. It was in Alfred Hitchcock's Rebecca.
Okay.
So if you liked her in Rebecca.
Who did she play?
She was the lead.
Okay.
She was the unnamed protagonist.
The Mrs.
She was the Mrs. So if you enjoyed her in that, and I know we did. This is just.
Is she gonna have a name in this one?
Strangely not. Strangely, she does, but she lost her legal name.
What?
So it's just question mark as. Alfred Hitchcock made her abandon her name. He was a horrible man. One day we should do a whole episode on how terrible Alfred Hitchcock was.
I'm willing to do that.
Strangely though, he doesn't seem as bad compared to a lot of the things that are coming out about people today. So, Alfred Hitchcock, you may be retroactively, what's the term I'm looking for?
Less bad.
Like, relatively vindicated.
Except for he was still a terrible, terrible man.
On a scale of one to monster, you're just a mini monster.
Well,
pretty
like
easy to read. He's
a
medium monster.
But maybe, to other people, he's a big monster because wasn't he racist?
Alfred Hitchcock, not that I know of.
he was alive in the 40s.
Well, I mean, of course, everyone was racist back then, but like, he wasn't like, he didn't do anything of like that I know of that was racist. I mean, maybe he was, but no, he was more sexist and obsessed with his lead actresses. So, indeed, that was my Alfred Hitchcock impression.
What a gross man.
I'm a little bit of a gross man. Sorry. That's my average being gross impression.
I mean, like, we don't really know how bad he was because we, like, none of the women who he directed are around now.
We know how gross he was because they wrote tell-all books about how horrible he was and did tell-all interviews and have discussed it recently, actually, the fact that he was a terrible person.
Good.
To them. So we know. Oh, we know. We know.
Ho-wink.
A ho-wink, because they told us. It wasn't even a secret now. Yeah. We know that he
was a terrible, terrible person.
He's a terrible, terrible person. But speaking of terrible people, I bet there's a terrible character in this movie.
There always is.
1941's Suspicion.
Suspicion.
Starring Cary Grant and Joan Fontaine. And speaking of 1941's Suspicion, I want to watch it.
Nah. Let's just talk about it.
Right. So for everyone listening, we're going to watch the movie now. And next time you hear our voices,
we'll have seen the movie.
We'll have seen the movie, so hold on.
And probably been through some other stuff.
To your hats. Here it comes.
For all you know, you may never hear our voices again because we could both die in a horrible accident.
That's probably right. Goodbye.
Bye. Really? Because you seem to not remember anything about it this morning.
I didn't remember anything about this. So for listeners at home, I actually had to write to Ollie and say,
what happened in this movie?
What happened in Suspicion? I can't. None of it's sticking with me.
You wrote me at like 6:45 a.m. as well.
Well, yeah.
And I was like, I didn't even wake up when you originally texted me because I was asleep like a normal person.
So I wrote to you at 6:46 a.m., we're recording Suspicion tonight, and I'm desperately trying to remember what happened in Suspicion. And you wrote, woman gets married to a guy she just met. Everything is good for a while. He lies about gambling. She's upset. Chairs are sold. Upset. She thinks he's going to murder his friend. He doesn't. His friend takes him up to London. He ends up dead. She thinks her husband killed him. She gets more and more anxious, and then bam, car ride in the mountain. Turns out he was going to kill himself. They drive into the sunset.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yep.
That's pretty much Suspicion. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Hey, everyone. I'm Phil.
And I'm Molly.
And
it's Del Toro time.
It's Del Toro time. And we're upstairs.
Yes.
And we don't have a whole lot of time to do this recording.
No.
Because it's late.
Yes.
And little kids have to go to sleep.
Yes.
Yes.
I had to think about that for a second.
It took a long time to get to this point tonight.
Yeah. Did we record an intro for this? We recorded an intro for this. Why did we do the I'm Phil and I'm Molly thing?
I don't know. We recorded an intro for this. I'll cut that part. I'll cut it out. Hello.
Did we record an intro for this?
Yes, we did. Because okay. I had to like sort of fill you in a little bit on what it was because you were like, I don't know what to say about this.
Didn't you not know what to say about it because you hadn't seen it?
Yeah, I had not seen this movie. Alfred Hitchcock's Suspicion, 1941.
We should probably start talking about the movie, huh?
Cary Grant, Joan Fontaine.
We do have a limited amount of time.
We do. And Nigel Bruce, in a big part, played Beaky, the best friend.
I liked him.
Nigel Bruce, I was watching it and I was like, God, what is Nigel Bruce from? Nigel Bruce is most famous. He played Watson in all the Sherlock Holmes movies ever.
Never
made.
Seen any of those.
There were like a ton of Sherlock Holmes movies, a ton of Sherlock Holmes radio shows, and Nigel Bruce was like Watson. He was like he defined Watson more than the books defined Watson for most people. Like he took the character from the books, who was just kind of a guy who like hung out with Sherlock Holmes, and he made this sort of stereotypical Watson's kind of an idiot Watson. Who like Sherlock Holmes just like, oh, Watson, you're such an idiot. And Watson be like, Holmes, blah, 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 blah. Kind of playing the same character as Beaky. Like, just sort of like, just nice guy who doesn't realize someone's trying to kill him.
Like, I wouldn't notice someone throwing a brick at my face, to be honest, so.
Fun fact, Beaky does not die from a brick to the face.
No. No, he doesn't. I wonder who actually killed him, though.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things. So Joan Fontaine is in this movie, and we saw Joan Fontaine in Rebecca. As the lead,
yes.
The unnamed protagonist, also Alfred Hitchcock, and mm-hmm. also playing a woman who's kind of a bookish, close to being spinsterish young woman who marries a suave
man who she just met.
Right. And then has not the best marriage with him.
Like it's until the end where everything turns out to be fine.
Turns out to be fine. And it turns out he was just going to kill himself. Is that how Rebecca ended?
Rebecca ended with him being like, she fell.
Oh, right.
And hit her head.
Right. Both based on books. The Rebecca based on Rebecca, and this movie based on the novel Before the Fact by Frances Iles. And like Rebecca, also a book that Alfred Hitchcock was like, I must adapt it. And like Rebecca, a book where they were like, you got to change the ending. Or according to some sources, Alfred Hitchcock was always going to change the ending. But the most people say that originally it was going to be like a B movie, like with just some people in it. Then Hitchcock came on board and he was like, I want Cary Grant and I want Joan Fontaine. And they were like, all right, well, you got to change the ending now because you can't have Cary Grant not be like the super guy hero at the end.
Although he's not really.
He's not really, but...
he's still kind of a skeezy sleazebag.
So we kind of gave you a rundown on the plot already. But let's take it a little bit slower.
Chairs.
Talk about these guys. So yeah, it's just like Joan Fontaine meets Cary Grant.
On a train?
Yeah, there's this weird scene on the train in the beginning.
She's sitting in like the first class compartment, and he's also sitting there, and then the ticket dude comes around and he's like, I want your tickets. And she's like, here you go. And he's like, and he takes the guy's ticket and is like, this is a third class ticket. And the guy's like, what? I didn't realize that. Takes her money and hands it to the guy.
Yeah, she like covers for him. And
but she doesn't really, because he just kind of is like, do you have some money? Oh, yes, I see you do. And then takes it from her.
Yeah, he's a real smooth operator.
And she's just like, what are you doing? I was just trying to read.
And he's a name, like he's like a person with a family name, a title, like a name. And she's also like pretty well off, or her parents are. She lives at home. And he's sort of like starts putting the moves on her, like when he locates her and they start like seeing each other.
She's totally not into him.
Exactly, because he's obviously a smooth operator.
Yeah, she's like,
But then she overhears her parents
say, she'll never find a man.
Then she's all like,
gotta find a man.
Give me that tongue. Because he's behind her and she turns around and kisses him. Because he's like stalking her through the strubs. There's a lot of like creepy behavior on his part. And it gets creepier. The story is, I say it's kind of like Rebecca, but like Rebecca is very much like a gothic romance, like in a giant mansion and stuff. And this is very much like more of a weird thriller. But it's interesting up to me. There's a major, the ending is a weird cop out. I feel like it's obviously heading in one direction and then there's a twist and it's not I don't know. I don't think it's a great twist. I'll leave that up to you though.
A great twist.
So they get married and they go on this like wild honeymoon that's like traveling the world, and they come back and he's like, I bought us this house.
And she's like, great. And he's like, I'll need your money though.
And she's like, don't you have any money?
No. What happened to his family?
Well, they don't really cover it, but in the novel it's more like he comes from a family of like layabouts who like had money, and then they all like kind of blew it. They're all like kind of worthless people. And he was like the kind of the last of the line. And everyone kind of knows he's worthless and kind of shiftless, but
her dad doesn't like him.
Yeah, like her family doesn't like him at all. But she's kind of naive and just like, I love him.
Even though she doesn't.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell. But he quickly reveals, he's like, yeah, I don't have any money. I'm going to basically mooch off you for the rest of my life.
And she's like, what?
Yeah. But her father sends a wedding gift.
Two chairs.
Four chairs.
No, two.
Was it only two? I thought it was four. Oh, I guess you're right. Yeah, two chairs. Two big chairs. Two big ugly chairs. Thrones.
That are like family heirlooms.
Yep. What wonderful chairs. And
she's like, oh, I'm so happy to have these chairs.
And he's like, chairs, eh?
And she's like, yes. And he's like, what?
And then they disappear.
Yeah. And she's like, where did my chairs go? And he's like, he makes up this elaborate tale or something.
He's like, hey, baby, I had to sell them chairs. Or like somebody came by and loved them chairs so much, I just said, sell them chairs.
Or I thought it was like someone came by and was like, I want to put these in a museum.
He's like, yeah, give me some money for him. And they're like, all right. And he's like, she's like, where's that money then? He's like, no, don't worry about it. There's a lot of that. Like, where's this money going to come from? And he's like, don't worry about it, baby. I got the money. And then he'll come up with the money. And then she'll be like, where's my stuff go?
And she's upset. And then is this when he buys all the gifts?
Yeah. So she...
she meets Beaky.
Yeah. So Beaky is his best friend, who's just kind of a jovial dude.
Who literally says to her, oh, you can't stay mad at him. He'll make up some elaborate lie to get out of trouble.
Right. Oh, and he also says, yeah, Beaky's just like, oh, yeah, he's a con artist and a swindler. He'll lie to you to your face. He's wonderful. I love this guy. And then the guy, Cary Grant, is Johnny. His name is Johnny. Yeah. And Johnny's like, oh, by the way, baby, I'm getting a job at my cousin's doing something in the office. And she's like, great. And that's when then she finds out he's been gambling at the track. And he's kissed a lot of girls. We find that out. He says that at one point. I kissed a lot of girls. And then she's like, I want you to stop gambling. But he keeps gambling. And then he's like, I won $2,000.
And she's like, great. And where is it?
He's like, oh, baby, don't you worry about that.
And then he comes back with a bunch of gifts. What does he buy her? A necklace? And like some hats?
He also buys something for the maid. Trudy?
Yeah.
Trudy the maid.
He buys her a fox shawl thing.
It's like an actual fox.
Yeah.
It's got like the head and the legs.
And she really likes it.
And you were kind of suspicious about this.
I was like, he's sleeping with the maid.
But that never comes to anything.
He's sleeping with the maid. We all know it.
But in the movie, it never comes to anything.
Yeah.
Fun fact, in the book, he's sleeping with the maid.
Yeah.
In fact, in the book, she has a baby by him. So the book... hey, the book goes into a lot more in depth. It also takes place over 10 years as opposed to the movie, which seems to take place over 10 months.
10 minutes?
Yeah, the movie goes by pretty fast. But yeah, the maid Trudy in the book has this illegitimate son, and it's his. Also, the woman, what is her name? What is Joan Fontaine's character's name? Lena. Lena McLaidlaw, even though I don't think you hear her last name very often. Has a best friend in the book who he's also sleeping with. Also, a lot of other women in town. Like, it's kind of this thing in the book. So, already, like, a lot of that's, like, sort of, like, brushed over in the movie. Like, you kind of get the sense that he's kind of known about town, but not that he's, like, doing anything behind her back.
Except for the maid,
but they never really go there. Like, you can sort of infer it, but it's not made. It's not explicit. She never shows up with a baby. And he's like, who's that?
Maybe that's why she left halfway through the movie. She never showed up again.
She's like, she says, goodbye, movie. And you're like, all right, goodbye, Trudy. We're done with you. He killed her. In any case.
And her illegitimate child.
Yeah. he sells the chairs. Beaky's awesome. And then you find out that he was embezzling from his boss.
His cousin,
this guy. Because why does she go to the place?
She hears that he was at the tracks.
Oh, right.
She's like, that's not true. He was working. And so she goes to his work and is like, what is my husband doing?
And they're like,
we laid him off a while ago. She goes and is like, I'm here to talk about Johnny. And he's like, don't worry, we're not pressing charges.
Like, blah, 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 blah.
And she's like, what?
Yep. And the boss is played by Leo G. Carroll, who you may remember from Rebecca as the guy who played the doctor at the end. He was like, she was dying of cancer. Leo G. Carroll. You may also know Leo G. Carroll from the song Science Fiction Double Feature from the Rocky Horror Show. I knew Leo G. Carroll was over a barrel when Tarantula took to the hills. And now you know more. He was in the movie Tarantula.
Okay.
So she's like planning on leaving him after all this mess.
She just doesn't.
She writes a note like saying goodbye and then she's like, nah.
And then she rips it up. And I was expecting him to like find the note and piece it together and be like, oh crap. Which I think did happen and that's why he was planning on killing himself.
Because then he's like, oh, by the way, your father's dead and that's no good.
I immediately was like, he killed him.
Right. That's what it seems like. He's like, yeah, I just found out your father's dead. Or she gets a telegram and she's sad. He's like, that's a shame. But in the back of his mind, he's like, money, money, money. But what does she get left by her father?
His portrait.
Picture of her father.
I would, if you, when you die, only leave me a big portrait of yourself, I will send that straight to hell. Oh, I will toss it into hell.
Hold on, I gotta call my lawyer real quick.
Don't leave the picture.
He says okay. Yeah, so he only gets that big picture. And then there's this weird thing with Beaky and a land development.
Well, he goes over and is like, imagine if we made this land into a resort.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, we could make billions or something.
Right on the edge of this cliff.
And she's like, okay.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to get my friend to look at this land and make plans.
And so the idea is that Beaky will like...
fund it.
Give them the money and then he'll...
do it?
Question mark? It's kind of that whole like, I'm the ideas man, baby.
And she even brings, she's like, Beaky, do you really know what's happening?
Beaky's like, what? Let's talk about Beaky's weird allergy.
He's allergic to whiskey.
Brandy, oh. Isn't it? Yeah, because in the very beginning, they're like, oh, what wonderful brandy. He's like, oh, by the way, it kills me if I drink it. And you're like, wait, why are you doing this in the first place? Like, to me, like, that's, if drinking brandy has like a 50% chance of just killing you on the spot, just don't drink it. Like, but it seems to be a problem for Beaky. And this is like early 20th century when it's probably easy to get another kind of alcohol. Like, I guess, like, it's not during Prohibition or anything. It's the 1940s.
They had other types of alcohol there.
Right. But Beaky's just like, oh, no, brandy.
And Johnny makes this really like dark comment. He's like, one day he won't wake up from that.
Yeah.
And she's just like, okay.
Oh, and by the way, all this is happening, Johnny has a good friend who's Agatha Christie. Agatha Christie lives nearby. It's not really Agatha Christie, no. But it's like, what is her
Agatha
name?
Agatha Christie is busy with the giant wasp.
Yes. Isabel Sedbusk. She's Agatha Christie.
Yeah. She writes crime novels that are very good and very popular, and Johnny really likes reading them.
Right. That's all he likes reading. In fact, he goes over to her house a lot to borrow her newest crime novel and also discuss ways of murdering people. Talks about it a lot, does he? Talks a lot about...
To be honest, though, so do I. Yeah.
If you had a friend who's a murder mystery writer, it's probably what you talk about.
Like, but also, like, if you look at my search history, you're going to be like, I write. I need to know these things.
Yeah. If you look at my search history, it's like...
Alfred Hitchcock's suspicion. Yeah.
Why is this guy like cartoons so much from the 80s? He-Man. This guy reads his body. Does he ever get any work done? Yeah. So Lena's afraid that that he's going to try to put one over on Beaky. And she kind of like tries to warn Beaky about it. And he overhears her talking to Beaky. And he's like, stay out of my business, see?
And she like faints or something?
Yeah.
Something happens.
Yeah. And so they go to, Beaky goes to Paris to close the deal. And
she's like, don't go all the way to Paris with him.
Right.
And he's like, okay, I'll just go to London with him.
Yeah.
She's like, So she anxiously waits.
And then what happens?
Beaky dies.
Beaky dies.
From a brandy drinking contest?
What a poison drinking contest? I can drink more poison than anyone. Oh, Beaky, no.
It's to drink an entire, like, pitcher of brandy.
Right. Which is probably not good for you.
Anyways.
Anywho. Like,
it's probably not even fun.
This sounds terrible. Do they go do it? What? But in the newspaper, so she reads it in the newspaper, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, idiot dies.
Or no, she gets a visit from the detectives.
Oh, right.
Who shows her the newspaper.
And there was like, so it's in Paris that this happened. So like.
And he hasn't come home yet.
Right, Johnny is still gone. And so they find out that like the waiter is like, he was with some Englishman, but we don't know who.
Who like left.
And who egged him on, who got him to do all the drinking. And who he kept referring to as old boy. Old boy? And she's like, she doesn't say this, but that's what he always called Johnny. So she puts two and two together and she's like, Johnny went to Paris because he hasn't.
And then she calls his hotel area. Right. And he's not there. They're like, oh, he left early this morning.
And she's like, what? And then he shows up and he's like, I just left. And she's like, lies. Lies. So he's been talking to this mystery writer about how to poison someone to death with it leaving no trace. And the mystery writer is like, and her father.
No, her brother, who's
her brother, right?
Who's or a morgue person, a mortician. Mortician.
Yeah.
And he's like, is there really such a poison that can leave no trace? And they both exchange these obvious looks, and the woman is just like, Lena? Lena's just like, gosh, darn it.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, the poison that leaves no trace. And I'm like, are they the only two people who know about the poison that leaves no trace? Like, they seem to be.
So there's this whole thing, like, so she's like, oh God, poison, poison, poison. And the next thing you know, Johnny's bringing her a glass of milk at bedtime.
Because she fainted.
Yeah.
She has a panic attack and faints.
Right. In the novel, it's much more explicit about the fact that she gets the flu. She actually gets sick and is bedridden. But yeah, so he brings her this glass of milk.
Spiderweb imagery.
Oh, right. So talk about the imagery real quick, because you're the one who pointed this out.
Yeah. So I can't remember. Is that right after they leave the, like... Yeah, it's right after they leave the, like, dinner party at the Mystery Writer's house. So the house... they open the door, the house is lit up, he turns off the lights, and she's like, what about the maid? And he's like, she's gone. She's like, what about the other guy? He's gone. So she's slowly getting more and more anxious. And in this, like, millisecond shot, like, briefly you see this window sort of reflection on the ground, and it looks like a spider web. But when they start walking upstairs and she's kind of freaking out, you see on the wall behind them just this giant spider web.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Like, it's a little obvious, but I didn't notice it at first. Like, it's a very ominous scene. Like, she's alone in the house with this guy she thinks is going to try to kill her. And then he brings her...
the glass of milk.
The milk. Here's a fun bit of movie trivia. They put a light bulb in the milk so that it was lit up. It's a subtle effect, but it made the milk brighter than it would normally have been to sort of, like, draw the audience's eye to the milk and make it, like...
ominous.
Magic milk. I put a radioactive isotope in it.
That would kill him too.
She drinks it, she gains the proportional strength and speed of milk. So
she can't move anything. Right. She can't do anything. She
dissolves. Like
that. She becomes milk.
Like the senator at the end of the first X-Men movie. Splash. Well, that was unexpected. Yes, I rewrote the end of the book. She does not turn into milk at the end of the book.
I rewrote the laws of nature.
Right. I wanted to make a movie where a woman becomes milk. Fills all my fantasies. I'm Albert Hitchcock. So in any case, he brings her the milk. But the next morning...
it's still full.
She didn't drink the milk, which I guess is probably smart.
And he comes in, and she's like, I want to go to my mom's. Or, like, she's like, my mom wants me to come to her house. And he's like, well, I can come with you. And she's like, no. And then he's, like, sad, because she doesn't spend time with him. So he's like, fine, I'll take you to your mom's. And they're on their, like, car ride, and he's like, don't come back. And she's like, what? And he's like, don't come back. And then they get into this road. Why does this road exist? And why did they take it?
It's Death Road.
Yeah, it's a giant mountain path that's very thin and very dangerous. Mm-hmm. And he starts driving like 600 miles an hour. And she's like,
oh no.
And then her door flies open.
Whee!
And he starts like grabbing around her. So she thinks she's trying to push her out.
Well, she starts like leaning back, falling back. Because there's no seat belts. It's 1941. And he reaches out at her. And you get this weird POV shot of him. Like, hey, folks, if you ever wanted to know what it's like for Cary Grant to grab at you, watch this scene. Because you get this crazy POV shot. They should make a 3D VR version of it so you can wear your special headset and be grabbed at by Cary Grant. He reaches and grabs at her. And she's like, ah! No.
And then the car stops somehow. And he's like, Jesus, you could have killed us all.
And she's like, you were trying to kill me.
And he's like, no.
And that's when you find out
he's suicidal.
Right. Why?
Never really, like, says it and then it never, like, comes back up.
Because he's been, so his whole explanation, he's like, this whole time I've been trying to get money to pay off my debts. Because there was this whole thing where she got a letter about, he had been inquiring about her life insurance policy. He had taken out this huge life insurance policy on her. And then, like, someone had written to him and been like, yeah, you can't, you can't get any money out of this until she dies. And she's like, dun, dun, dun. And he's like,
I was trying to get the money so I could pay back my cousin.
That's what I was doing in London. That's why I didn't come home. I was trying to get money off your life insurance policy, borrow against your life insurance policy to pay off my cousin so I would be out of debt to him and would get square all the way. And then it couldn't. So I was going to drop you off at your mother's and then kill myself. The end. No, and then she's like, I love you.
And she's like, oh, crap. I love you. And he's like, no, you're going back to your mom's. And she's like, no. And he's like, yeah. And there's this weird back and forth where it's no, yes, no, yes, no, yes. And then they drive into the sunset.
Yeah. And then she's like, we're together in this forever. Which, okay, so that's a manipulative thing that guys do a lot, which is feign suicidal impulses.
If you leave me, I'm going to kill myself.
Or that's... like, I was going to kill myself. And like, oh, I don't trust him. Because you know what? He does never come across as suicidal this whole entire story.
Literally, he stops the car from going over the edge. And he's like, you could have killed us. He's obviously upset about almost dying.
Right. He almost dies. The only reason that he didn't... The door flying open, whatever. Like, I don't know why he was driving so... Like, this part doesn't make much sense. Like... Why was he driving like a maniac? Because he was upset? Like, but he doesn't... If he's honestly going to drop her off at her mother's, why is he driving in a way that could kill her? Like, that doesn't make any... Like, yeah. He stops the car. She's not... I don't believe him.
I think he was going to kill her. Something happened with the car. It stopped. He was like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, dear, okay, why did you push me away? I was trying to get you back in the car.
It might not surprise anyone that this was the new ending that was written in the book, which, again, takes place over 10 years-ish. She is the point of view character, and she's slowly going basically nuts from suspicion, from paranoia. It's told from her point of view. You're pretty much told in the beginning that she gets murdered by this guy.
Yeah.
It's it. And you're watching, it's this, apparently this is a new kind of novel that was gaining popularity from this writer, which was, it was kind of like a reverse mystery where you're told everything up front. Here's the murderer. Here's who gets killed. Now let's see how this happened. And she's getting more and more paranoid. He drives her father to death. Like, her father's very weak, and he keeps, like, pushing him to exert himself more. I think you do find out that, yeah, he killed Beaky. Like, he was the guy who went to... He was the guy who went to Paris. It's more a little more of a mystery, but he sleeps around a lot. He kills someone else. He causes someone else to die, like, in a mysterious way. And then, at the end... She's like, he's going to kill me. He's going to poison me with the magic poison. And then she gets sick, and he's like, here's your milk. And she's like, well, people die from the flu all the time. That's so they won't suspect him. And then she drinks the milk because she's in love with him. And she's like, I love him. Drinks the milk. But you're supposed to sort of get this sense that she's just totally, she's so paranoid by this point that she can't even make choices, like, correctly. However, the book also leaves open the idea that maybe it is all in her head, like in the movie. Like, maybe she drinks the milk. The book ends right there. So maybe she drinks the milk and she's like, nope, that was...
Or she dies from the flu.
Or she dies from the flu. But you don't know. So it does kind of the same thing as the movie where you're like, what's going on with this poor woman? But yeah, then that's the end. What'd you think of Suspicion?
It was interesting. I didn't like the ending.
Weird ending.
I feel like they could have just had him pull her back into the car and, like, hold her.
Yeah.
And then she, like, breaks down and he's like, it's understandable that you suspected me because I was being really suspicious. Yeah. And, like, not be him be like, oh, I was suicidal the entire time.
Yeah, it's weird. It reminds me of the weird ending of Rebecca where he's like, and then she
accidentally fell and hit her head,
so I put her in a boat. I'm like, wait, what?
And for some reason he doesn't get caught.
Yeah, the whole thing is kind of a little smelly at the end. Cary Grant helps. Boy, is he charming.
We never find out what happens to her mother.
She's fine. She's sad. Her husband's dead.
Maybe she's not sad. Maybe she killed him.
Oh, it's true. Maybe there's a whole other story going on.
Maybe she was just so fed up with him complaining about their daughter's wedding.
Maybe the mother was working with Cary Grant, and like they were going to show up at the house, and the mother was being like, "You brought her," and then they like kill Joan Fontaine, and Cary Grant's like, "We did it," and then they like kiss or something. I
feel like that wouldn't happen. I don't think that she, Lena, had written a will.
Oh, well.
And
well,
she hadn't been left any money.
That's true. She didn't really have much. Like, she had an allowance, basically. Like, yeah. A very small yearly allowance.
Monthly.
Allowance. Monthly, yeah. But it wasn't much. Just yeah. enough to get by. But he needed to get a job. Like, yeah.
Somehow they managed to keep the house.
They had a bad relationship.
It was an unhealthy relationship.
Still do. I mean, I'm sure they're both dead by now. He'd be over 100, but in... Well, yeah. We had this conversation in the last episode. we don't need to talk about whether or not actors are alive or dead or what happened to their children. That went nowhere last time. Nowhere good.
Nowhere good.
But this kind of kicked off the second phase of Cary Grant's film career. He was kind of known as like a comedy romantic lead. And this sort of began the like, oh, he's good at like playing like charming but creepy as well. Like he could play like really likable, but also kind of intimidating at the same time.
That scene where he yells at her was horrible.
Yeah. Cary Grant was good. Mm-hmm. He got his training in vaudeville. He was a stilt walker and an acrobat and a juggler. And he was a unicyclist known as like Rub Legs or something. Like he came from Europe. He was from England. And then like his mother was committed to an asylum, and then his father, like, abandoned the family. So, like, he and his brother moved to America to do vaudeville when he was, like, really young. And he became, like, super, like, good, like, on the circuit. And he would, like, do vaudeville and was, like, a clown almost. And then he, like, moved in with Randolph Scott, and they were, like, buddies who walked.
Just two bros sitting good. 5 feet apart because they're not gay.
They didn't sit very far apart. They walked around in swim trunks a lot in pictures of them.
That's a meme joke. No. Yeah.
No, he and Randolph Scott were kind of life partners for a good long while. But you could not be life partners in Hollywood. You got to get the marriages. Everybody got married, regardless. I think Cary Grant was married 5 times. His daughter to this day insists that he wasn't gay. She was like, no, he was just really, really comfortable with men. He thought it was hilarious people said he was gay. I don't know if he was gay. I think he was bi, just from looking at his bio.
Like, he may not have known he was bi.
Right. I mean, they say he had an obsession with blonde women. That was kind of his thing. He liked the ladies, but
that was kind of his thing. Every Hollywood actor has a thing, and it's may or may not be true.
But
some of them sexually harass women and then get sued and fired.
Right.
Which is good.
But Cary Grant was, most people from Hollywood were like, yeah, it was kind of an open secret. Like, Cary Grant, he was one of the guys. Like, he was one of those guys in Hollywood. Never really happy with his lot in life, but he made like 100 films. And then all of his friends died in the 70s. And he was like, you know what? I'm old and I'm tired of acting and I'm sad because all my friends are dead. So I'm going to retire. And he did. He's totally retired from acting. At the end of his life, he did a one-man show that he toured around with where he showed clips from his movies, talked to the audience, he answered questions. And he was like, this is stupid and self-centered, but people seem to like me. He got a lot of new, like, young fans. And he was like, it's really conceited of me to do this, but it's kind of nice to get this, like, boost at the end of my life. And then he died.
That's not the worst.
It's not the worst Hollywood ending.
Yeah. He didn't drink himself to death or drug himself to death.
He lived into his 80s and, you know, like we were like, good on you, Cary Grant. His real name is Archibald Leach, which is fun. It's the most British name ever. He chose the name Cary Grant. It was
It's funny because his real last name is Leach and he leeches off his, the woman in the movie.
He does. It is funny. he chose the name Cary Grant. It's kind of an inversion of Gary Cooper.
I don't know who that is either.
Gary Cooper was a big Hollywood guy at the time.
I figured that much, but...
And he was like, Gary Cooper, Cary Grant. Like, reverse that. And it's a very...
How is Grant a reversal of Cooper?
Well, just the CGGC thing. And then, you know, it's just... It's sort of a stereotypical American name.
Cary Grant is not a...
Now, I don't know if you noticed this, but Cary Grant's accent in this... was very, like, hard to pin down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wait, is he British? But sometimes he sounded British. It took place in England. And then I looked it up and I was like, well, Cary Grant was a British actor originally. What's with his accent? And this is what's known, and I love this so much. It does not exist anymore. It was called the Mid-Atlantic accent. And Cary Grant had the perfect example of the Mid-Atlantic accent. The Mid-Atlantic accent is fascinating because it doesn't exist. It's a fake accent that only Hollywood people had. You learned it. You went to school and learned to speak with a Mid-Atlantic accent. And it's Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn was known for it. Or when you hear old newsreels or radio personalities, it's that sort of an accent that talks like this. And everybody talks like this. And they sort of pronounce certain words certain ways. And you're like, what is this voice you're doing? But people talk like this. And they don't hit their R's in the same way. And you're like, is that British? Is that American? No, it's Mid-Atlantic. It's halfway between. And it was taught to actors and orators as kind of this perfect accent. And it sounds weird now. But if you want a modern example of it, watch The Hudsucker Proxy. For an example, Jennifer Jason Leigh does a spot-on Mid-Atlantic accent in it. Also watch Hudsucker Proxy because it is a flipping delightful movie and a joy to watch at any day.
What's it about?
It's a Coen Brothers movie. It's about the invention of the hula hoop. It's a tribute to basically old Preston Sturges movies and old Katharine Hepburn movies. And it's very, very like bizarre and crazy. And watch The Hudsucker Proxy. It's a classic gem. Anyway.
Alfred Hitchcock suspicion.
Stop using that voice.
No, I'm Alfred Hitchcock.
This was the beginning of Alfred Hitchcock's relationship with Cary Grant. He did several movies with Cary Grant.
The end.
How does that make you feel?
I don't like him.
You don't like Cary Grant?
No, I don't like the other guy.
No. I don't know
anything about Cary Grant, so I can't.
So
really...
it's weird. After Rebecca, why do you think? So Del Toro has three Alfred Hitchcock movies on his list.
Only three?
This is the second one, and the next one's coming up really soon. Why do you think? I can see Rebecca. It's very like gothic, and. But why suspicion?
I think suspicion because he read into the same like undertones that we did.
Such as
he really did kill all these people. He's lying to her.
I don't know. Like,
I feel like also maybe it's just the like imagery used, like the spider web, mm-hmm. and just the general suspicion.
I can see like if someone like Del Toro really liking a filmmaker like Hitchcock because Hitchcock's frame is so controlled, like everything that happens in Hitchcock's frame is because Hitchcock wanted it there, and Del Toro's the same way. And Hitchcock was, you know, love him or hate him, he was good with actors. He knew how to get performances out of actors, not unlike Del Toro. It's just funny because it seems like if you're going to choose three Hitchcock films, why is suspicion such a rando choice? I mean,
maybe he just really likes the movie.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if maybe he saw it and was just like, all right, I like this suspicion.
We have other things to talk about with Del Toro, though.
Before we get to that, though, suspicion.
Recommend.
You do recommend it. Mm-hmm. It's a light recommend for me. I don't know if I'll be...
I'm not going to watch it again. I'll never watch it. I'll probably never think about it again. I recommend if you are sitting with like a really good friend, watch it and make fun of everything.
Yep. It's a quick watch, too. It's not very long.
Sleepover movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. If you're looking for a classic film. And
get drunk with your friends movie.
It is very well made. Like, it is. The performances are great. It doesn't... Rebecca, in some ways, kind of overstays its welcome. It gets a little long at the end, I feel. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love Rebecca, but like... Once you get into whole like the investigation and the doctor and like the running around in the courtroom and Rebecca gets kind of strange, but suspicion is tight. And Cary Grant and Joan Fontaine are, of course, wonderful together. There's a lot of weird cliff imagery too. Like you talked about the spider web, but like he grabs her by a cliff at the beginning, and you're like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "I'm just trying to fix your coat or something." I was like, "Huh." And then at the end, like he's grabbing her again, and she like flashes back to the beginning of the cliff, and then there's like the cliff with Beaky and. Oh, yeah, and Beaky's great. He's a great character. We gotta love Nigel Bruce. Just give up props for Nigel Bruce. I don't think that there's a... I don't think there's a Criterion of this one. I think there's just a general, like, DVD. I could be wrong, but the DVD that I checked out from the library was fine. It was fine. Yeah. It had, like, a little like making of thing on it and like the movie's trailer. But like, it's a very popular story.
Oh, we watched the movie's trailer.
That's right. It was weird. It was narrated by her.
She's like, this is a story about the man who killed me.
You're like, no, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. It
wasn't at all. Oh, we made this trailer before the final cut of the film. So, light recommend from me, recommend from you.
Light recommend from me.
Suspicion, 1941.
It depends on the scenario. If you are having a sleepover with your friends, great movie to watch. If you're getting drunk with your friends, great movie to watch. And let's be honest, if you're getting high with your friends, great watch movie Freaks. To watch. Watch Freaks too.
Watch Haxan.
Don't watch Haxan when you're getting high.
Don't watch Vampire. That will mess you up.
Also, like, don't watch any monster movies when you're getting high or drunk.
Right. Drink responsibly.
Have you ever heard... did you hear the story about the guy who killed his, like, friend because he thought he was turning into a zombie?
No.
There was a guy who was drinking with his friend and they were watching The Walking Dead and his friend started pretending he was turning into a zombie and the guy killed him.
Well, there might have been other problems in the relationship before then. Oh my God, it is already 8 o'clock. It is time for everybody to go to bed. But Ollie, answer me this. What is... the next movie.
I have no idea.
And, no, you're supposed to let's drag it out. Drag it out a little bit.
Next movie is...
what is the next movie? Why, ladies and gentlemen, I would love to tell you the next movie. It is just... it's going to blow your little minds.
It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be amazing what this movie is. The next movie on Guillermo del Toro's... we never say Ecstasy of Influence anymore, by the way. On the Ecstasy of Influence is...
this amazing movie called...
it's Jane Eyre with Orson Welles.
No idea what that is.
Orson Welles, Joan Fontaine, who we saw in Sullivan's Travels, the lead from Sullivan's
Travels.
Joan Fontaine.
Do you mean also the woman we just saw in Suspicion?
Did I just refer to What's-Her-Face as Joan Fontaine?
The entire episode.
This entire movie. When I should have been... no, wait. Wait. Oh, wait. No. This was... who was in Sullivan's... I'm so confused. Sullivan's Travels was Veronica Lake. I'm sorry, because Veronica Lake is on the take. Yeah. I'm such an idiot. I keep confusing these... no, you're right.
They look very similar, Dad.
They don't look similar at all. I'm confused.
I'm trying to make you feel better.
I'm racist. I confuse all attractive women from the 1940s. Joan Fontaine. Yes, we just saw Joan Fontaine. We're going to get to see the delightful Joan Fontaine again in Jane Eyre. Also, our first and probably only Orson Welles movie. Very exciting because he is an odd actor. And it's Jane Eyre, which is a classic strange story. So that's it. That's it.
Goodbye.
See you all next time. Oh, I'm Phil.
And I'm Ollie.
And we'll see you when
it's Del Toro time.